It's the 25th of November, and this is Rabbi Manning Shiur.
Good morning, everybody. It's very nice to be back. Thank you. I've been running around North America over the last couple of weeks trying to find some nice students for next year to come to Israel. Baruch Hashem, there are lots of good people in the pipeline. So it's all very hopeful, but Ezrat Hashem. Oh, all sorts of things. I can talk about it afterwards. We can talk about it later. The topic that I've chosen for today is a fascinating one. It's a technical and complicated one as well. And therefore, we're going to have to focus hard and try and keep track of what's going on, but it has many, many, many practical ramifications in the world of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. It's almost more of a meta-halachic topic. It goes beyond the specifics of a halachic area, and it informs and influences many of the almost hashgafic approaches towards this whole topic. Sefer Bereishis that we're reading at the moment is full of interpersonal relationships and analysis of how they work. And the further we get into Bereishis, the deeper and more complex and psychological they become. Yitzchak and Rivka and Yaakov and Esav and Yosef and the brothers and everything. And therefore, the whole of, in many ways, Sefer Bereishis is an analysis on the human relationships with other people. And you'll see many examples of those coming up in the next couple of pages. Kovod Havriot means giving respect and having respect for other people. And we'll see it's not necessarily just Jewish people, but it's all other people. It's a universal idea. And Chazal built this into the halachic system such that in many situations we'll see where the Torah would otherwise say something is prohibited, Kovod Havriot overrides that and says, yes, but in these circumstances, because an individual is going to be embarrassed or upset, we'll see what that means, then this otherwise prohibition may, under certain circumstances, be set aside in the face of Kovod Havriot. And we'll see a very wide-ranging application of this. Obviously, each case is specific to itself, and it can't necessarily be extrapolated, but nevertheless, we see the Chazal were very serious about taking seriously the Kovod Havriot of other people, and therefore they built this into the system. That the halachic the discussion is in Brochus, and it deals with an apparently unusual circumstance. What happens if you're walking down the street and you suddenly find, to your horror, that you're wearing shatnas? Shatnas. You're wearing shatnas. Kilayim, shatnas. Meaning, you're walking down the street and somebody says to you, ooh, that's an interesting suit. You are aware, of course, that suit is full of shatnas. I bought one like it a couple of weeks ago. I had it tested. They said it's a waste of time. Throw it in the bin. There's nothing you can do. And you say, I had no idea. What should I do? So that is the Gemara's first question. Number one. Hamotzi kilayim bevigdoi. You find, suddenly, you discover that there are shatnas, there's kilayim in your clothing. What should you do? Said the Gemara. Push down. Take them off. Afilu bashuk. Even if you're in the middle of the public domain, shuk doesn't dafka mean machane Yehuda. Shuk means in the public. My timer, the Gemara says, what is the reason? Why? How can you embarrass someone like this? And he brings a pasuk from Mishlei: Ein chokhma, ein tzvuna, the ein eitzel neged Hashem. I'm right. Ein chokhma, ein tzvuna, the ein eitzel neged Hashem means you can't rationalize mitzvahs. There's an issa Torah of shatnas. If you're wearing shatnas, you can't say, well, under these circumstances, you know, God wouldn't mind, you know, it's embarrassing, any more than, remember the story I told you once about my having presented with a plate of tray food by one of my senior partners at a meal. I remember I mentioned this story to you. He made this wonderful meal for us, and it was actually completely tray. He puts it in front of me. It's a highly embarrassing, very difficult, awkward situation. So do I have a heifer to eat tray food just in order to avoid embarrassing myself? No, I'm sorry. I ate chokhmah, I ate food, I ate chokhmah. I can't just rationalize away a mitzvah. I can't do it. Sorry. Kol makom sheyesh chilul Hashem, wherever there is chilul Hashem, means a breach of a mitzvah, a public breach of a mitzvah. Ein chokin kavod l'rav. You can't even give kavod to the rav. You have to take your clothes off wherever you are. So the Gemara challenges this. Tashma, is this really true? Let's look at the following. Gadol kavod abriot. But surely, says the Gemara, how great is kavod abriot? Doesn't that push aside an Issa-Tora? Wouldn't the embarrassment, wouldn't the public indignity push aside that prohibition of wearing Shabbos? V'amai? Why would it? Lema, why do we say Ein Chochmah v'Ein Tzvunah v'Ein Eitzel v'Neged Hashem? So how do those two principles come up against each other? On the one hand, Kovod Abrius, it says Chazal say, pushes aside a Torah mitzvah. On the other hand, you can't rationalize away a Torah mitzvah. So the Gemara explains in three different ways, and we have to understand these carefully. Number one, Tirgama Rav Shva Kameda Rav Kahana. Rav Shva explained as follows: Belav the Lo Tasur. It's not any old prohibition in the Torah that Kovod Abrius pushes aside. Doesn't push aside kashrus, doesn't push aside shatnas, it wouldn't push aside other things, but it does push aside one prohibition, which is lotasur. What's lotasur? Lotasur is the prohibition that you're not allowed to deviate from the rabbi's mitzvahs, rabbinic mitzvahs. When the rabbis create a mitzvah, you cannot just ignore that, and if you do ignore that, you're breaking the Issa d'oraita of Loisasa. In fact, it's actually very interesting philosophically that certainly according to the Rambam, every time a person breaks a rabbinic mitzvah, they're actually breaking two Torah mitzvahs. There's Loisasa, and there's also the mitzvah's assay, the positive mitzvah, to listen to the words of the rabbi. So you end up in a very interesting, you know, dilemma. Actually, if you were to eat a piece of pork, let's say, you're breaking one Torah mitzvah. But if you were to pick up a pen on Shabbos as Muksa and say, I don't care about Muksa, you're actually breaking two Torah mitzvahs, which is interesting. The Ramban asks that question on the Rambam, which is not our subject for today, but that's something that needs to be dealt with. But Loisasa, rabbinic mitzvahs are set aside for Kovod Abrius. Kol mili derabbanon, all issues which are derabbanon, says the Gemara, asmachin hu alav de loisasa, they are connected to, they are learnt out from. Asmachin is a complex word which again sounds like it's an asmachta, but it's not for now. They're connected to the word, the mitzvah of loisasa, umishim kvoidash. Because of Kovod, Sharu Rabbanon, the rabbis let you do it. Meaning, the rabbis imposed a prohibition in normal circumstances, but in circumstances where there is Kovod Abrius as an issue, where there's public indignity, they waived that. They said, no, actually, in these circumstances, we do not require you to keep this particular halacha. And we'll have to see many examples of that. And this is the most common application of Kovod Abrius, that you're dealing with a rabbinic prohibition, and you would otherwise need to keep that. Actually, no, you don't need to keep that now because of Kovod Abrius, and we'll give you the examples that come up. That's the first example.
So they have to do
Duraisa. Then you would have to do it, absolutely. You're Duraisa, you can't break, but a Drabonon, you can, under certain circumstances. So the Gemara then gives another example, Tashma Behitalam Tamehem. It challenges, it says, oh, isn't there an example of where someone can not keep a Torah mitzvah even, because of Kovod Abrius? What's the example? The Hitalam Selehem, that's a Shavas Aveda. Under certain circumstances, a person, even though they find lost property belonging to another person, they do not have to put themselves into a situation of indignity in order to return it. Let's say somebody, there's some lost property underneath a truck, dripping with oil, and the Rosh Hashiva walks past, and he's going to have to crawl on his hands and knees and get his dirty and crawl underneath to get this person's wallet. The answer is, he says, no. The halacha says there are certain times when you can turn around and says, lolifik for thee, I don't have to do that in order to return the property. Ah, but isn't that against the Torah? The halacha is, sometimes you can ignore it, and sometimes you can't. Ah, haketzad, how does that work? Im haya kohen, v'haya bebeis ha-kvoros, if you are kohen and the lost property is in a graveyard, or haya zaken, or if you're a senior elder, v'einu lefi kvoida, and it's not dignified for you to return it. Or shehaitza malachta merubad v'shal chaveru, that's another example where it would cost you more to take it back than the thing's worth itself. Well, the Kach Namai says it's alamta, you can ignore it. Am I? So why, says the Gemara, Lema ein chachma the ein tzvum the ein eitzel the neged Hashem? Why do we rationalize away a Torah mitzvah and say, oh, it's not a big kvotcha, it's not befitting to you, it's a Torah mitzvah, forget it, don't rationalize it. The answer is no. Here too, you can set aside, not because of it being derabbanon, because it's a Torah mitzvah, but he said, Isura mimamoina lo yafina. This is a monetary obligation. And again, Chazal had certain authority to set aside monetary obligations, even on a Torah level, because of Kovod Abrius. It's not an Isser, if you like. It's not a ritual prohibition. It's a money issue. And therefore, again, the Torah wants to say, again, for certain issues, like money issues, Kovod Abrius will override those issues. That's the second example. The third example is very interesting. Tashma. La'achoto. Who's this talking about? A Nazir. A Nazir is allowed to is not allowed to become Tamei Nes even for his closest relatives. A normal Kohen who is not allowed to touch a dead body is allowed for his relatives, immediate relatives, to go to a funeral to become Tamei Nes. For a father, for a mother, for a son, for a daughter, for a sister under certain circumstances. That's a normal Kohen. For a wife, of course, for a wife, exactly. The Nazir is like a Kohen Gadol. The Nazir cannot become Tamei for anything apart from one thing we'll see. Not even for his sister. What is the Torah telling me by enumerating or listing all of these relatives? Gives the case. There's a Nazir, and the case is also that he's a Kohen, and he's going to shecht his Korban Pesach. Why Korban Pesach? Because that's a positive mitzvah, which is one of the most important positive mitzvahs. It's chayv kares if you don't do it. Ula mulet banoya, and he's going to do a bris milah on his son as well. He's trying to put the maximum case together, and that's also a positive mitzvah where a person's chayv kares if they don't do it. Ushama shemes lo meis, and he hears that there's a dead body. You would have thought that just like he cannot become Tamei for a normal relative, you might have thought he can't become Tamei for a Meis Mitzvah. It's only relatives. Even a Nazir, even a Kohen Gadol, even on his way to do a Korban Pesach and to do a Bris Milah on his son, put together the maximum number of reasons why not, has to still set aside all of those issues in order to bury a dead body. Amai, why do we say that? Lema, why don't we say Ein Chochma ve'Ein Spuna ve'Ein Eitzel Neged Hashem? The answer is Shev Ba'al Taseh Shani. The Gemara answers, here you're allowed to break those mitzvahs for Kovod Abrius. There's no greater Kovod Abrius than dealing with a person who needs to be buried. That's the greatest indignity of all. It's Shev Al Taseh. What does Shev Al Taseh mean? You're not actively breaking a negative prohibition, you're just passively not keeping a positive mitzvah. You're not doing the Korban Pesach, you're not doing a Bris Milah, and therefore, again, Kavod Abrius has the ability to override those mitzvahs, even though they're Torah mitzvahs, they're positive Torah mitzvahs. We find this sometimes, by the way, that Chazal can sometimes turn around and say that even though there's a positive Torah mitzvah, for other reasons, we don't think you should keep it. For example, we don't blow shofar on Shabbos. Even though it's Rosh Hashanah, there's a positive Torah mitzvah to blow the shofar. Chazal said, you know something? We think you shouldn't blow the shofar in case somebody breaks Shabbos. What do you mean? The Torah says to blow. Yeah, but we say don't blow. It's fine. Same with lulav on the first day of Sukkot, if that falls on Shabbos as well. We don't shake lulav. Chazal can tell us to override the Sheva al Taseh, a mitzvah, for other circumstances, for other reasons. Here too, because of Kavod Abrius. Yes.
He's allowed to be Matame for a Meis Mitzvah, but and also if his sister...
No. They say the reason it lists these relatives as people that he cannot be Matame for, he may not be Matame, is to tell you that these relatives know. But there is a case, yes, which is the case of the Meis Mitzvah. Now, what do we learn from this? Again, I told you it's a bit technical, but what we learn from this is fascinating. There are three basic circumstances in which Kavod Habrius will override what would otherwise be a halachic prohibition. Number one, where the halachic prohibition is rabbinic, we see that Kavod Habrius can override that. Number two, where it's a monetary obligation, we see that Chazal often said that Kavod Habrius can again override that. And number three, where it's an inactive, if you like, breach of a positive obligation, again Chazal said, Kavod Habrius could override that. An example of the latter, by the way, in number two, which I'm not going into in depth because I don't have time for all of it, is if a person were to be wearing tzitzis, and back in the day they used to wear tzitzis on their regular clothing, they didn't wear special talis for tzitzis. So what would happen if they discovered in the middle of the street that actually their tzitzit had ripped and they were now wearing a four-corner garment without kosher tzitzis? You're not allowed to do that. You would think that you would have to rip it off and pull off the clothes and say, no, I can't wear this, it's prohibited. The answer is no. Because it's a positive mitzvah to wear tzitzit, Kavod Habrius will override that positive mitzvah to wear tzitzit. and allow you to keep walking until you get to somewhere where you can get changed in a sensible way. Which it didn't for the Shatners, if you remember. When the Shatners, it said, I'm sorry, it's a negative prohibition, there's nothing you can do, you have to take the clothes off right here and right now. So we see those cases. Ah, but you're going to tell me, but what about being a Kohen, being a Nazir? How can it override that? Isn't that a negative mitzvah, not a positive mitzvah? How is he allowed to be Matami for a Mace mitzvah? So Tosfos talks about that in number 3 and says that even under certain cases in a negative mitzvah as well, Kavod Abrias Nazir is not a regular negative mitzvah because you could always get out of being a Nazir. Similarly, a Kohen is not a regular negative mitzvah. In other words, there are lots and lots of cases that Chazal are trying to fit in that Kavod Abrias overrides what would otherwise be a mitzvah. In the Yerushalmi, you even find a case that, or the Mio Paschal like this, that Kavod Abrias is so strong it overrides every mitzvah on a temporary basis. Look at number 4. Afilu betumah shehu midvar Torah. Even if a person has to do something which is midvar Torah, okay? Mimanda amar Rebbe Zera, Godel Kavod Abrias shedoichel a mitzvah beloy ta'ase sha'achat. Yerushalmi says, as long as it's temporary, it could even override a negative prohibition on a temporary basis. So we see that this, in theory, in principle, this is a very serious, a very major, has a major impact on the halakhic system. And what I want to really do for the rest of the shir is to give you examples as to how this works and how this is put into practice. Let's have a look at the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch codifies this in number 5. In the case of the Shatnas, Haroye Kilayim Shel Torah Al Chavero, and here he gives an even more interesting case. If you see someone else wearing Shatnas, Kilayim Shatnas. If you see Kilayim Shel Torah Al Chavero, you're walking down the street and your friend, you notice, has Shatnas in their clothing. Afilu Hayim Mahalech Bashuk, even if you are walking in the marketplace in public, Hayakayfeslo, you have to jump on him. The Kairam Alav Miad and tear his clothes off. Says the Shulchan Aruch. Afilo hayo rabbi, even if it's your rab. Maybe you should ask the Shaila before you do this in practice. But it's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Now we'll see. The Ramah is going to come in later and give an interesting limitation to this. The im hayo shel divrehem, but if, and of course you have to be a Talmud Chacham, if they're wearing shatnas derabbanan, meaning you need to know your shatnas, the shatnas min haTorah and the shatnas min rabbanon. If you know that the mixture is only rabbinic in nature, ain't a Torah, of course you can't then. The ain't a push to b'shuk, don't take it off in public, after megila basel, until you get to somewhere private, the im hayah shel Torah, but if it's a Torah shatnas, poshto miyad, you have to take it off immediately, and the reasons we said. If it's rabbinic shatnas, Kavod Habrias will override the prohibition of rabbinic shatnas, but not the prohibition of Torah. Yes. Oh, so we'll talk about sneers in a little bit. The Shulchan Aruch, maybe I'll mention it now. The Shulchan Aruch didn't mention an issue of tzniut here. By the way, tzniut applies to men and to women. It might be slightly different in different cases because of the nature of, you know, embarrassment in different ways. But at the end of the day, the concept of tzniut is a very interesting one, and we could get into a whole discussion about it. The word tzniut is used by Chazal to mean someone who is careful and medakdek in mitzvot. Tzniut is used in those ways, and therefore tzniut means, and this is a whole shiur in of itself, being dressed in the appropriate way for the appropriate circumstances. That's what tzniut means. It doesn't mean being dressed in a particular way in all circumstances. And therefore, think of the case of the in Tanakh of David and Michal, where David was dancing like crazy in front of the Aron Kodesh, making a public spectacle of himself, and Michal comes round and says to him, how can you do that in front of the servants as well? How can you behave that way? And he gives her Musa, and he says to her, that's why I'm the king and your father isn't. Because Shaul was very tsanua in a certain way, which was the wrong way. Meaning, he didn't realize that in certain circumstances, certain behavior is required. And David HaMelech said to him, this is the way to be tsanua, right here and right now. Because this is the appropriate behavior. Just like the way to be tsanua in the swimming pool is to be wearing a swimming costume. A swimsuit, not necessarily wearing a full burqa or whatever it is. I don't know what the burqa ladies wear in the swimming pool, but I don't want to know really. But the point is that the right way to be in the right circumstances. That's an important point. you know, if God forbid somebody's in a building and everyone's in their pajamas and the fire alarm rings and everyone has to run into the street, no one's going to turn around and say, well, you know, what about sneers? Excuse me, there's a fire alarm. Like, this is entirely appropriate to be dressed like this in these circumstances. So too, if a person is about to break an Issa Torah, they can't turn around and say, well, it's not Sanua, because being undressed is the right way to be in these circumstances. I think that's the answer on the sneers point, but it's a whole sharing of itself.
What about the concept of you embarrassing your friend in public? They're killing you.
Yeah, but
go ahead and pull the posters.
I understand. Maybe you'll have to tell him, just as you're about to do it, just be aware the reason I'm about to do this is because you're wearing shatnas in public, or wearing shatnas. So I suppose you'd have to, the understanding is that he'd rather be embarrassed than be breaking an Issa Torah. I mean, let's imagine the following case. Let's imagine somebody accidentally puts a plate of trafe food in front of your friend and they're about to eat it, and you realize it's trafe and you snatch it away from them. And they scream, what are you doing? You're taking my... And the answer is, well, you do know that that was traitor. Oh, well, Hashem, I'm glad you did that. I mean, maybe there's a way that you could do it in a way that wasn't embarrassing, but it's a good question. Yes?
How do you get from being the tzaddik in this verse?
That's a whole shir. It's a whole shir. I'm not getting into the whole shir on sneers as well. Sneers is far more complicated than people think. If you want, on the website, there are 3 shirim on it, and if you're interested, you could always look at that. Now, before we get into all of the practical cases, yes? Okay, I don't want to give a whole share on Shanis Midaraisa. Shanis Midaraisa means it's actually intertwined in some way. It could be Shanis Midrabanon. I'm not an expert on Shanis, so please don't quote me on this. But it could be Shanis Midrabanon. If you have wool here and linen here in different parts of the same beged, then it would be Shanis Midrabanon, not Shanis Midaraisa. But I've taken many suits to be Shanis tested over the years, and only one time I was told it was a write-off. But one time it really was a write-off. I was told the suit was irremediable. There's nothing you could do. Just throw it in the garbage. There's nothing that can be done with it. And it's rare that that happens, but it can happen. It was a handmade suit. It was a very interesting thing.
Yeah, exactly.
The last, exactly. I stick to Marks and Spencer's now. It's more reliable. Okay, fine. Let's go. Have a look, please, in number 8 to 10 for a second. Is this talking about Jews only?
What number?
8. Number 8. Over the page. Not necessarily. The 6 and 7 deal with a tzitzis issue, which I'm not getting into in great detail. The question is this Jews and non-Jews? And the answer is not necessarily. Look at actually number 9. The source got missed off, but it's a Rambam. It says, Kol Eilu HaDvarim. He's talking about the Dayanim and how the Dayanim have to treat the people who are in front of them. Kol Eilu HaDvarim Lefi Masha Yira HaDayam. Number 9. Yeah? All of this is according to how the Dayan... All of this is according to how the Dayanim sees the case in front of him. Whatever is necessary in the time, or b'chol, and in all things, says the Rambam. Yihi amasav l'shem shamayim. The Dayan, the judge, has to be very l'shem shamayim. Ba'al yihi kavod habriyas kal be'inav. He should never underestimate the importance of respecting people's personal dignity. Because we see, says the Rambam, Kavod HaBriyos pushes off rabbinic mitzvahs and others, as we saw. V'kol shekein, and even more so, Kavod Bnei Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov. Hamachzikim b'Torah Ha'elot. But even more so, meaning Kavod HaBriyos, says the Rambam, applies to every human being. Kal v'chomer to another Jew who is connected to Torah and mitzvahs. But you see from here that Kavod HaBriyos is a universal idea. And also I brought you the in number 10, Rabbi Yekiva says, Chaviv Adam Shenibra B'Tselem. And we'll see at the end of the shir that the roots of Kavod HaBriyos we'll see is in Tselem Elokim. And every human being is created in Tselem Elokim. And therefore, since the Kavod HaBriyos is rooted in that Tselem Elokim, it would apply across the board. Now, what's called indignity? We've seen from the cases that the Gemara gave, it seems to be something to do with clothing and being dressed and being undressed. We see this in Adam and Chava in Gan Eden, the clothes of the Kohen Gadol, the Chavod Ulitiferet, the mitzvah of Kavod Shabbat is related to clothing on Shabbat. There's a clothing theme here as well. It's also, interestingly, talks about burial. We've seen that personal hygiene is very important as well. People who are caught in difficult circumstances will give you examples of that. But not every case is called Kavod HaBriyos. Meaning, just because a person might turn around and say, I feel embarrassed if this happens, that doesn't necessarily mean that this fits into cover the breach. There's a somewhat objective definition. It's things to do with people having to be, you know, naked in public or in difficult circumstances in public. You'll see the cases as we go through the examples. And there are also degrees of indignity. The Mishnah Berurah talks about this and in different cases. I'm not getting into it now. I'd like to get into some of the practical examples as we go forward. Let me introduce you to a remark. Yes. It's not necessarily the issue. Let me look at this remark, and this is going to open up a couple of really hair-raising cases. Number 13. And from now on, we're going to speak more or less to the numbering, and we'll see how we get the cases come up. Now, we said that kovod habrios overrides not only rabbinic mitzvahs, but also the passive breach of a Torah mitzvah. So let's see an example of that. Number 13. Haroi kilaim shel Torah ala chaveiro. This is the case we saw in the Shulchan Aruch. That if somebody sees someone else wearing shatnez, afilu hayo mahalech b'shuk, haykofet zlo v'korom ha'alav, afilu hayo rab. Fine, we saw that. Says the Ramah, v'yesh omrim, but, he said, you could see it like this. If the person who is wearing the shatnez doesn't know that they're wearing the shatnez, they're not doing it on purpose. Lo b'chavana. Ein sarich loima b'shuk. You don't have to say anything in public. Why? Demishum kovod habrios yishtok. Kovod habrios will allow you to keep shtum, to keep quiet. You don't have to stop him from doing the avera. Why is that? So let me ask you a question. What is my obligation to stop other people from doing averas? What obligation do I have? What is that mitzvah? This litnei iver is that I can't actively help them to do averas. But here is not the case. So what is the mitzvah for me to stop other people, to intervene when other people? It's a mitzvah of tochacha. I have a mitzvah of tochacha, which means that if chochiyot tochayim tamitecha, which we need to look at in depth in another shiur, but that is a positive, active mitzvah. Says the Ramah, one second, if there's a kovod habrios problem, maybe kovod habrios will override your active personal obligation to give tochacha. You allow the person to do the avera, and only when they're in a more dignified circumstance can you tell them. And therefore he says, you know something? If they don't realize, then don't say anything and tell them later. And if you look at another example of this in number 14, kohen sheshochev arum. If you're a kohen, and you sleep without pajamas on, which could be a bit of an occupational hazard, because if you're a Kohen, you never know when you might have to run out of the building. If you're in a building, if you're in an apartment building, and lo aleinu, somebody dies in the building, and you have an issue of tumah, under certain circumstances, the Kohen may have to leave. Okay? You know, if a person, God forbid, you know, collapses in shul, whatever, the last thing they want to hear as they fall on the floor is Kohenim leave. But the Kohenim sometimes have to leave. So if you're a Kohen, says the Ramah, maybe you should either buy yourself a pair of pajamas or be aware of the following. Kohen Shashokhi Barum. Sit Shulchan Aruch. Vahuba Oihel im Hamates. Velo Yava. And he's asleep. And he turns out that there's a dead body in, causing a problem with Tumah. And you now have a dilemma. You don't know whether you should tell him or not. Should I wake him up? Should I not wake him up? Ein lagid lo. Says the Ramah, you don't have to tell him. Because the kovod habrios angle of him having to... He can't stand there and get dressed. He's got to get out of here. But he doesn't know. And you don't have to tell him. Al yikran lo stam. Just waking him up stam saying, time to get up. Yeah? Sheyot says he'll go. Kadei sheyal vishasmo. He'll get dressed, okay, tchila, before he goes out. Avalin kvar higiduloi. But if he already knows, also lahamsin, then he can't wait, then it's too late. Actually, al bishasmo, he has to run out in the street, and someone has to throw him a blanket or something. V'dafkin huba oil ames, shehu doraisa, as we see, that's only if it's a doraisa. Avalin huba beis hapras, if he's in a tumah drabonon, again, you have to know your halacha, then he doesn't have to worry about it, because it's drabonon, kovod habrios sets it aside. Let me give you two applications of this, which are very interesting, and a little bit, as I said, hair-raising. A case came up with the Noda of Yehuda a few hundred years ago. The Noda of Yehuda, Rav Cheska Landau, was asked the following. He was living in the 1700s in Central Europe. There was a case where a young yeshiva bocher was lodging with a family. And eventually, the family, as is often the case, made a shidduch. There was a daughter, and he married the daughter. Mazel tov, very nice. They got married. Everyone's happy. But everyone's not happy, because it turned out that actually, before the shidduch was made, the young yeshiva bocher ended up having an extramarital affair with the mother he was lodging with. You think this only happens today? You're wrong. It's happened also hundreds of years ago. So he had a relationship with the mother, and now he wants to do tshuva. Now he wants to do tshuva, and the shaila is to this Nodi Yehuda: does he have to tell the father? The father doesn't know. And the wife, of course, did it on purpose. She knows, but the father doesn't know. And if he finds out, it'll cause public outrage, scandal, and indignity on the highest level. And the Nodi Yehuda was asked, does he have to tell the father? Because the father is doing averus, because he is now with the wife who committed adultery, and he's not allowed to be with her. But he doesn't know. And now this yeshiva bocher wants to do tshuva, has a shaila: do I have a mitzvah tochacha to tell the father, or someone should tell the father, to stop him from doing this because he's actively breaching the Torah in being married to this woman, or not? Interesting situation. And the Nodi Yehuda goes round and about and around and about to try and work it out. In the end, they find a way of telling him in which it's not going to cause a public indignity, but the understanding was that Kavod HaBrios could well override his obligation to stop this person. I give you a more up-to-date case. This case came to Rav Avadi Yosef. In the end, what he did is they managed to find a way to tell him that they didn't get divorced, but they just lived apart in the house because they were older, and said it would work that way. Mm-hmm. They found a way around it, but it seems to be the implication would be that if there was no way around it, maybe he wouldn't have to tell it. This is the case where for sure Rav Avadi Yosef said he did not have to tell. And here is the following scenario. There was a young girl who got married. This is a tshuva in, I think it's in Yichavidat, Yichiyomah. And he says the following: a young girl got married to a nice young man, nice young girl, and they had a baby boy, a bechor. Everyone's very excited. There's going to be a pidyon haben, and the boy, the husband, is very excited because who gets to make a pidyon haben? It's quite a rarity. So the husband's getting all ready. The girl now is beginning to get worried. Why? Because the husband doesn't know that in the earlier days, during her teenage years, she went a little bit off the rails. She got herself pregnant somehow, and she had an abortion. This is all in the past. This has all been, you know, it's past history, and she's done tshuva, and everyone's happy. But the end of the day, there is no pidyon haben here, because it's not a bechor. But nobody knows that apart from her, maybe her immediate family. He, the boy, does not know that. The man, the husband. Interesting case, right? Does she have to tell him that they're going to have to call off the pidyon haben, and he's going to make a brocha, which, by the way, for Rav Avadi is like a big deal. For the Sfaradim, it's a brocha levatola. It's a breach of the Ten Commandments. It's a very big deal. Okay, he's going to have to do this, and it's all going to be wrong. Does she have to tell him? And Rav Avadi says no. She doesn't have to tell him, because the kavod habrios, what that's going to do to the husband, to the marriage, to the family, to everybody, overrides her mitzvah of tochacha. Meaning, it wouldn't override his averus, but he doesn't know. He's a shogeg. This is a, you think when you read the case of the Kohen in the pajamas, you think, well, that's a strange case. When would that ever apply? The answer is, in the cases that I've enumerated, that it applies.
In the first case, there's no question of mamzerus also.
There's no question of mamzerus. What's the question of mamzerus?
The husband doesn't know. He
no, but he's married. Well, that wouldn't create a mamzerus if he were to.
Child
first of all, they were old, and it's not going to create any challenge. Well, why would that create a mamzerus if he's married to her? It's just that they're not allowed. There's no arayas there. They just have an issa lav in order to be with each other because she's had an affair.
She didn't have a from the guy that was the
father. She didn't marry the first guy. She'd have had a baby from the other guy. Yes, for sure. Let's look at some of the practical applications, and you'll see that they are manifold and varied. Let's look at the rabbinic prohibitions being overridden by Kavod HaBrios. One of the most classic ones, which is a practical one, is somebody never gets stuck in the bathroom on Shabbos. This happens all the time, you know, and you know, everyone's forgotten to get things sorted and ready, and they have now a situation where they're either going to have to sit and sort of scream for help in the bathroom, or they're going to have to find some way of managing to with the regular toilet paper. And the answer is, that's a classic. If they can tear a regular toilet paper with a shinui, which normally would be also, you can't start doing everything with a shinui on Shabbos, like turning the lights on with your elbows. You can't do that. You could only do that in certain circumstances, maybe for a chayla in certain circumstances. But here, says the halacha, For kovod habrius, meaning the indignity of you being stuck in the bathroom, this is a classic public hygiene type of case, you can tear the toilet paper with a shinui on Shabbos, that's the heter, and the heter is kovod habrius. And tearing with a shinui, as I said, would normally be very asur, it's an isadrabonim, but it's set aside. This halacha is across the board, and it comes from a Gemara which talks about muksa on Shabbos. Back in the day they used to use, I'm not getting into the details now, but they used to use different kinds of stones to clean themselves in the bathroom, and if you forgot to prepare this before Shabbos, and stones being muksa, Chazal say that in order to avoid the personal indignity of the hygiene issue, you're allowed to even use the muksa stones on Shabbos, because you're allowed to override the drabbonim. It's interesting that Tzitz Eliezer takes this to another stage, and he has a shaila about, again, I'm not passing any shailas here, please ask privately if you need, but he says, what about a deaf person who needs to move his hearing aid or to do things with a hearing aid on Shabbos, because he can't hear anything, and that's going to be very, you know, publicly embarrassing that he can't hear what's going on. So under certain circumstances there may be, because of kovod habrius, again a heter to be able to move things which would otherwise be muksa. I'm not getting into all the details right now. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had a similar case of somebody who had very bad breath, and it was very embarrassing. You see the kind of cases we're talking about. And normally taking medication on Shabbos for minor ailments is an issur d'rabbanan. You're not allowed to take medication for very minor things. Okay, if it's major, it's significant, of course you can take medication. Someone is really sick, maybe not even life-threateningly, they can for sure take medication. But if you have a minor ache or a pain or a bit of a sore throat or a sniffy nose or something like that, then it's an issur d'rabbanan. So the guy says, okay, so look, you know, it's not a major issue, I just have very bad breath, can I take the medication? But if I don't take the medication, I can't go anywhere. Everyone runs away. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, of course you can take the medication. It's refuah on Shabbos, it's a nissa d'rabbanan. No, but it's kovod habrius. You have to be able to function. You have to be able to get out and about on Shabbos. That's definitely mutter. Look at the case in number 15. This is a Shulchan Aruch. This is a very famous case that happened with the Ramah. The Ramah deals with the following circumstance. You cannot get married on Shabbos. That, the Gemara says very clearly. Why can you not get married on Shabbat? What is the problem? The problem is making the kinyan. You're not allowed to make a kinyan on Shabbos. It's an issur d'rabbanan, because when people make a kinyan, they normally write things down to record it. Therefore Chazal said no marriages on Shabbos, because people are going to make notes, the registrar or whoever it is makes the notes of the marriage, and that's going to be a breach of on a Torah on Shabbos, therefore you cannot get married. The Ramah dealt with the following circumstances, and it was a cause celebre back in the 16th century. It used to be the minhag that people married on a Friday afternoon, because no one can afford to have fleishis twice a week. There was one old cow in the village, and that cow had to be good for Shabbos. I remember Rabbi Wein telling me once that his father, who was a Rav in Eastern Europe, he says one of his jobs was all Thursday night he used to sit there with the shoychet looking at this old cow almost dead and definitely treif according to almost every opinion, and find out some way of finding a heifer for this cow so that the village would have meat for Shabbos. So it's not such a straightforward thing to have meat for Shabbos back in the day, and therefore they had the wedding Friday afternoon. The sudas for the chasna would be the same as the sudas Shabbos, and everybody would have meat. However, what happened on this particular case, and it's written up in the Tshuvas and also in the Shulchan Aruch, which we'll see in a minute, is that a young girl and a young man were getting married on Friday afternoon, and they were probably only teenagers. People got married in 12, 13, 14, and as they were leading them to the chuppah already, the family started talking, the machatonim, about yes, and of course you're putting in X thousand and we're putting in Y thousand, and they said, oh no, that's not what we agreed, we're putting in Y thousand, you're putting in X thousand, and they said, oh no, that's definitely not what we agreed. And as they walk into the chuppah, everybody starts arguing. So the Ramah says, come on, I'm sure we can resolve this. He takes them in Poland, in Krakow, he takes them into the building, and they talk it through, they work it all out, everybody smiles and everybody's happy, and they come out and they say, right, let's do the wedding. And someone says, too late, look, stars all over the place. It's Shabbos, definitely Shabbos, Rabbeinu Tam, everybody, it's Shabbos. You can't do the wedding? No problem, we'll do the wedding on Motzei Shabbos. Said the Ramah, we will not do the wedding on Motzei Shabbos, we'll do the wedding right now, on Shabbos. You can do a wedding on Shabbos. The kavod habrius, he said, of this chosan and kala standing there, ready for the chuppah. They're going to have to wait another 24 hours. Who knows if the families are even going to be talking to each other in 24 hours from now. Okay? He says, we do the chasna, we do it right now. On Shabbos? Yes. And he got letters, complaints, how can you break the Gemara? The Gemara says you can't do weddings on Shabbos, what is this? And he said, no. And look at what he writes in the Shulchan Aruch. They can't even ask him, you know, look what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. He goes, I wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he'll say to them. But they look at what he writes, number 15. Ein Mekadshim. So he says, you can't get married. And the Ramah puts, V'yesh Matir in the Kaddish. There is a heter to get married on Shabbos. Heter de ein lo isha abanim, if a person has no wife and children. The Esher to who I did, or maybe that's the case, okay? Hichnisa le chuppah shari. There, if you bring it under the chuppah, shari, afa gav the loy kamel an hafi. Even though we don't paskin like this normally, mikol makom somchim al zeh, we can rely on this b'shas adchak in an emergency. Gam ki gadol kavod abrias. Also, because how great is kavod abrias, kamoy shiragil shalafamim shaloy hayicholin lehashvot im hanadunya, and he gives the case, if not everyone was clear on the dunya, on the money situation, but Yom Vav, Ad Halayla, and it stretches on into the night. The Oisin Achuppah, the Hakidushin, the Leil Shabbos. You can do the Chuppah and the Kiddushin on Leil Shabbos. Hoy Lukvar Hichinu Lesuuda, since everything's ready, the Suuda's ready, the Chosn's ready, the Kala's ready, the Suin, the Havi Biush. It's a terrible embarrassment. Lakala ula chosin. Interesting, he also says lakala ula chosin. Remember when we did Hachnasos Kala? The Rambam says, lesameh kala v'chosin. See that, yeah? For the kala, especially in the chosin, im loy yichnois as if they don't get married now. Mikol makam lechatchile, yeshnidash in loy yavoli dekak. You have to try and avoid this. Have your arguments on Friday morning, not on Friday afternoon. But he said, if push comes to shove, you're allowed to do this. And this, as I said, was a very famous and somewhat controversial case where the Ramah put his foot down and said, absolutely, we will do the wedding on Shabbos. And again, classic example of Kavod Abrias overriding a rabbinic mitzvah, the mitzvah of a wedding on Shabbos, a rabbinic mitzvah, in order to avoid Kavod Abrias, problem over the public embarrassment. No, so that they'd have to do after Shabbos, they did already before. They'd have to work some other way of doing that. Maybe they would be able to write on the ksuba. Writing on Shabbos is a problem. There is, of course, a heter, which is separate to this, to get a non-Jew to write a contract, maybe not a ksuba, to buy property in Eretz Yisrael on Shabbos, because you never know whether you might still have the opportunity after, and buying property in Eretz Yisrael is a major mitzvah, but that's a separate issue. We talked about the kohen and the pajamas. This is applied in cases of wheelchairs. Sommet use this as part of their arguments to create different kinds of Shabbos-friendly wheelchairs. Being housebound for days, not being able to get out on Shabbos at all, could be an issue of kavod abrias. It's also a question of, let's say a person wants to dye their hair. A man wants to dye his hair because he's prematurely grey. I can identify with that a little bit, since I'm only 22 years old, no, I'm joking. But a person wants to dye his hair, maybe there is an issa, maybe there's an issa drabbanon to dye a person's hair of beged isha, of lo yalbish, lo talbish, because even though it's not beged isha, it's an effeminate kind of thing, or is it? Maybe there will be circumstances in which he will be allowed to dye his hair if he's doing it because he's embarrassed and he's not able to get a shidduch, or he's not able to get a job because he needs to look young. It used to be in the world that looking old was an advantage. Now it's more debatable. Another classic example, and then I'll get into two more controversial ones. Another classic example that you have is as a shliach tzibur, a person's not allowed to daven if they need to use the bathroom. We're just on page 4, at the top of page 4. We're not in a number quite yet, but we'll be there in a second, just here. Yeah, a person is not allowed to daven if they need the bathroom. Okay, so you don't daven, you go use the bathroom, you'll daven afterwards. But what if it's Kol Nidre, and the Shliach Tzibur is ready, and everybody's poised for Kol Nidre, and all of a sudden he needs to use the bathroom? This is an issue for Shliach Tzibur, and what do they do? So obviously they have to try and avoid it, but under certain circumstances, if it's a rabbinic prohibition, it depends on how urgent his need is, he might be able to daven even though he needs to use the bathroom, because the covered Tzibur of him running out of shul just before Ne'ilah or whatever, and everyone has to stand there for 15 minutes whilst he finds the bathroom and comes back. Obviously, that's not very good. The advice I would give to Shliach HaTzibur is don't think about whether you need the bathroom, because if you think about it, for sure you will need the bathroom. There is a question of that comes up also of what's with shaking hands. So this is a covered up rias discussion. Somebody comes along, they put out their hand. Are you allowed to shake their hand, obviously of the opposite gender, in order to avoid embarrassing them in public? And this can be very embarrassing in public. So this gets into a whole question really of shomen agiyah, which I'm not getting into in detail now, but it may not be as relevant as people think. Meaning, if you look into the halachas of shomen agiyah, then it's either an issa d'oraita, meaning, according to the Rambam, and it seems according to Shulchan Aruch, shomen agiyah is an issa d'oraita. Meaning, if there is an inappropriate sexual intention on either part, there's an issa d'oraita. Fine. If there is no such intention, then it's not an issa at all. Meaning, if you go to the doctor, or if you're in physical therapy, or whatever it is, or a nurse is helping you, there is obviously no issa there of shomen agiyah. Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked a tshuva, this is quite a famous tshuva of a man who was taking the subway every morning to work, and he said that, you know, a part of the subway experience is you get pushed against other people on the subway. Is there an issa of shomen agiyah? Do I have to take the subway at 5 a.m. to avoid people? Or can I take it at 7:30 and risk being bashed along, you know, into people? And Rav Moshe writes very partially, said, look, if you're under normal circumstances where people find this an irritation rather than a pleasure of any kind, being thrown up against people on the subway, then of course there's no issa. It's not a shomen agiyah problem. Like, nobody enjoys that. You don't enjoy it, they don't enjoy it. Enjoy it. It's fine. Yeah. If you've been on the tube, you'll know that too. He says, if you happen to be somebody who enjoys being thrown against other people, then yes, you have a problem, and you have to take the subway earlier on, and that. But so with shaking hands, really, according to many poskim, it'll either be clearly osa because there is an inappropriate intent, or it'll be clearly mutta. Where's the issa drabonon involved? Meaning, covered up rias is going to override the drabonon. So is it indeed an issa drabonon? Now there are those who want to say shomen agiyah is an issa drabonon. I'm not getting into that now. It's a machlokas between the Ramban and the Rambam, but there are those who want to argue that it could be a covered up rias angle if you say it's a drabonon. But I'm not so sure that you really get there, because either it's a doraisa, in which case covered up rias won't help you, or it's mutter, in which case you don't need covered up rias to help you. And there are poskim throughout the centuries and even today who have clearly paskined that in a situation where there is a business, it's a business environment, and there's no indication that there's anything inappropriate going on, then if a person extends their hand, you can take their hand. Abdul Victorian says this in America today, in Brooklyn. A lot of people say this. This is not a chiddush, and this was a practice for many years. Of course, if it's an inappropriate scenario, then that's different. And every scenario is different. People say, you know, should the rabbi shake hands of the women in the communities? There are communities where this is absolutely, you know, if the rabbi won't shake the hands of the ladies, then he won't get a job.
But if somebody gives you your hand,
right,
you have to take it.
Right.
Otherwise, you embarrass
good
the person who gives you the hand.
Good. So again, I think it depends on the circumstances. In a normal business and the circumstance, I agree with you 100%. Absolutely. But there are situations. You know, you have a youth rabbi, 23 years old, and all the 19-year-old girls want to shake his hand. Is that the same? That's not the same. So there's a certain amount of seichel that has to be involved. But certainly in the business scenario, I was a lawyer. You know, I tried everything. You know, you walk in with bags in each hand, and you were always and you could wave from a distance. You can avoid it in certain circumstances. But I had a student who was going for graduation, and a part of her graduation was that, you know, that everybody walks down the stage, they walk over to the dean, they shake his hand, and they walk back. Fine. So she was very, very careful, and she said, she asked the college, do you mind if I don't shake the dean's hand? And the college wrote back and said, of course, it's no problem. We'll inform the dean that girl number 396 is not going to shake his hand. This is the Meister. So, of course, the poor old fellow, he's about 93 years old anyway. He's totally smashed. He's no idea who's going what. So she comes down, and he's just completely puts his hand out. And of course, you know, she had to take his hand under those circumstances, I think, according to many poskim, because it clearly would be, for everybody, a major cover the brief. And there's clearly no... And I don't even think, again, you don't need to come on to cover the brief, because I don't think that there's any issa in that case, but you have to override. Yes?
A religious woman won a big prize. I forget if it was a prize or not. And she walked along the line. They all knew not to shake their hands.
Right. Well, there was a recent case with the Pope. Who was it who was with the Pope? Sipi Chotaveli, it was someone else who they arranged that she wouldn't, from the Israeli government, they would, she was from woman, she wouldn't shake the Pope's hand. The Pope was fine with it. They arranged in advance. In fact, the Pope even, you know, bowed to her. They did a like little thing. Very nice. You know, yes. There's definitely no question that if you can avoid the issue, it is preferable to avoid the issue. And there are post-game, let me make absolutely clear, that say that shaking a woman's hand is Yahari Valiyamo, you have to die rather than do it. There are post-game that say that, I'm not joking. There are post-game that say that, and that's a, that is a respectable psak. But that's not the psak. That's my Masorah, and my Masorah has been, certainly someone extends their hand, unless there are inappropriate circumstances, which hopefully there aren't, then it's okay. But it might not be even a covered up Bria's issue. What's been more controversially suggested over the last few years is women's aliyots. And I'm slightly treading out onto thin ice on this, but I'm not expressing an opinion in either direction. But one of the arguments that's been made is as follows. If you look in the halakha, the reason that we do not call women up to the Torah is because of kavod hatzibur. Kavod hatzibur. Whatever that means, kavod hatzibur. And there are different ways of understanding kavod hatzibur. But the Gemara says that in principle, women would count towards the seven aliyot on Shabbat. But we don't call women up for kavod hatzibur. I'm not getting into a whole argument, a discussion about what that means. However, there are cases we see where kavod abriyot overrides kavod hatzibur. For example, there's a famous Maharam in Rottenburg, who says the following. If you have a shul which is only Kohanim, there's only Kohanim there. And who do you call up Kohen? Well, that's not hard. Anyone. Who do you call up second? So if there's no Levi, so who gets the second Aliyah? The same Kohen. You can't ever call up a Kohen after a Kohen, because if you call up a second Kohen, it's casting aspersions on the Kohen of the first Kohen. Maybe he's not like a real Kohen. And there's a big Kohen Abrius issue there. So the second one you call the same guy. But what about the third Aliyah? You can't call up another Kohen. You can't call up the same fellow for a third time. Ein davar kazeh. So says the Maharam of Rothenburg, you call one of the ladies from the ladies. You call her up. So he says, what about kavod hatzibur? What happens to the Gemara says kavod hatzibur? So he says, no, kavod hatzibur of the Kohen will override kavod hatzibur. Now, it's not so straightforward. First of all, do we even paskin like that Maram of Rothenburg, even in that scenario? Interesting question. Second of all, can you apply that to a modern day scenario, which is what people want to argue, which is they want to argue that there is a general kavod abriyot, the women today feel, or maybe some women feel, that intrinsically insulted at not being able to be given equal access to the aliyot, and therefore the kavod abriyot angle will override the kavod hatzibur angle, and therefore women's aliyot should be allowed. This is the argument that is made in the in partnership in Yanim, of which there are some in Yerushalayim, there are many in America, and this is a growing phenomenon. The question is this a legitimate application of kavod hatzibur or not? And the answer to that question is, who am I to say? But the senior poskim across the world, from every branch of, if you like, Orthodox Judaism, from the most left to the most right, have clearly said no. And on these kind of issues where you're trying to put together minority opinions in order to make a real innovation in halakha, which clearly this is a real innovation in halakha, the legitimacy of stitching together these minority opinions, it cannot be done by a junior person sitting, you know, working it out for themselves. They cannot be done by some kind of crowdsourcing, which is what I've had this argument with people all about, people making up their own halakhic ideas. It has to be done by a senior posik. If a senior posik turns around in 20 years and says, yes, that's fine, okay, we can move from there onwards. But so far, nobody has, and it looks to my mind that nobody will. Yes?
In a short, what does kavod hatzibur mean?
So I said, it can mean different things depending on how you understand it. It could mean, again, it could mean a specific issue to do with this tzibur, meaning this tzibur will be insulted if you give a woman the central role, in which case you could argue, well, maybe this tzibur will not be insulted because they don't have a problem with that anymore. You know, if the chief executive of the company can be a woman, then why can't you? Or it could be a more general statement about the role of women in society. I'm not getting into that right now. If you want to read articles, I can recommend you lots of interesting articles to read on this, pro, anti, in the middle, etc. But I'm just bringing this up because I think in today's 21st century arguments, covered up riot is used in this way. And again, I'm going to dodge the issue by saying personally that the senior poskim have said it's inappropriate, and therefore until they say it is appropriate, I had this argument with a very good friend of mine once at the Shabbos table, when I said to her, she's a very strong proponent of partnership binyanim, and I said to her, look, which senior poskim has said that this is acceptable? Come on, tell me. Rav Henkin is the person who you would have thought would be the most sensitive to this issue, and he's clearly said that it's not appropriate. So eventually he said to me, look, I don't think we need senior poskim anymore on these issues. I said, fine. So I said, that's an honest answer. He says, on the issue of the calling up the women, so maybe there's a halakhic discussion to be had. But on the issue as to whether you need senior poskim to direct the halakhic process, there isn't a halakhic discussion to be had. That clearly steps outside an authentic halakhic system. And if that's where people are coming from, then that's something that has to be thought through carefully. A couple of other issues, and then we will draw to a close. Maybe let's just look for a second at where this idea comes from. Where did Chazal say such a poshut idea, covered up riyas, is so important? Where did they get it from? They never give a source. So a lot of people are looking to try and find that source, and I've given you four options. Number one, it could be Tselem Elokim, meaning, as I said before, everybody, every human being is created with Tselem Elokim. I brought you a source on the bottom of page 4 with talking about Zeh Sefer Tovas Adam as being the most important klal in the Torah. Tselem Elokim is definitely one option which would explain where Kavod Abrius comes from, that every human being is made in some way in the Tselem Elokim. Also, Dalet Vehei. What's Dalet Vehei? So this is an interesting example, more technical. Number 19. If a person were to steal a sheep or an ox and they shecht it, or they sell it, they have to pay 5 times the ox. If for the ox, the arbat sign tachat aser, and 4 times the sheep for the sheep. And the question is, why? Why do they have to pay more for the ox? The ox is already worth more. They already have to pay more money just because the ox has a greater value. Why would you be let off a little bit for having stolen and shefted or sold the sheep? So if you look at number 20, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, Barei kama godol kavod abrius. Look how strong kavod abrius is. Sure, shehalach baraglav, the ox walks by itself, chamisha. So the thief who stole the ox didn't have to schlep it. He just whistles and the ox comes out. But the sheep, shehekivu abtepo, he already schlep. He had to undergo the indignity, nevach, the gana, of schlepping the sheep. He's already paid a little bit for that. Arba. He only has to pay 4 times the sheep. Interesting. Even the covered abrius of the gana, not the sheep. We're not worried about the sheep. And by the way, in terms of, we saw the mitzvah of burying a dead body being so important. Where do we learn that from? We also learn it from an almost like a kal v'chomer in the case of a criminal who was chayiv mita. This is where we learn this halacha from in the Torah, that was a mitzvah to hang the body after they killed the person. They had to bring it down before nightfall and bury it. Even such a person. Therefore, there is this idea of kavod abrius from there. We see the idea of kavod abrius also from Bahalachta Vadrachav, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Malbish Arumim. We have to copy Hashem. We have a mitzvah to copy Hashem. Just like Hashem is concerned at the embarrassment of Adam and Chava and doesn't want them to be publicly in a situation that breaches Kavod Abrius, so should we. But I wanted you to give the last word to Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz has a beautiful discussion about Moshe and Aaron. So you can read the whole thing to yourself. I don't want to go over time. But Moshe, he says the following. Moshe is at the snares, at the burning bush, and God says to him, you are going to be the Goel. And eventually the argument he uses is, or one of the arguments he uses is, how can I do it when my older brother, Aaron, will be offended? So God says to him, he's not offended. Go and meet him. He's happy. He doesn't mind if you're the goel. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, and what if he did mind? The implication is, if Aaron did mind, then, okay, Moshe, you're right. You can't be the goel at the expense of your older brother's public embarrassment. And if that would indeed have been the case, then Moshe would not have been the redeemer. This is an amazing thing, because the covered up rears to Aaron a Kohen would have been, not yet a Kohen, Aaron's, would have been so significant that his younger brother has overtaken him, that he says Chazal looked at things like this and saw through Svara that covered up rears were central. So I think we've seen many examples of this, and there are many, many others. Obviously, as I said before, each case has to be applied with a shaila, but a topic which overrides the halacha. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we are going to look at the knotty problem of kibud av ve'em, both from the perspective of the parents and from the perspective of the children. Okay,
we'll see you then. Please go.